2 Corinthians 9, and I've entitled it, I think it's giving, but also mostly acts of generosity. And because I knew I was going to be gone for a week, I did something unusual for me. I wrote my talk ahead of time. Some of our speakers do that always, and some of us don't, and I'm one that doesn't. It was typed and done before I left a week and a half ago, so I'm not sure I can remember it now. See, that's the one advantage of doing it late. But I was reading this passage over and over because there were two passages on giving, one in chapter 8 that Christina did last week, and then another one, and we're trying to think, you know, what can we do that's different or the same? And so I just kept reading it over, and I thought, what really hits me? And so in the first part of the passage, these are some of the thoughts that just came to my mind. I thought, what's the bottom line that I'm seeing? And it was about, the first chapter is about the people in Corinth and about them giving a gift. And I saw that they had been eager to financially help the Judean believers who were in a hard time. They'd been planning this for over a year. And their enthusiasm then stirred others to action. But Paul wanted to make sure that they were ready to give it because it had been over a year. And so he was sending what I want to call the finance committee to come ahead and just make sure that their boasting about giving wouldn't be hollow. Because I think, you know, it's really easy to be excited at first when we see something we want to give to it, like some of these things, and then it kind of wears off. So Paul wanted to make sure to finish the arrangement that they had made for the gift so that it would be a generous gift. Because when you plan something, it's generous, but if you don't have it planned or you sort of forget about it, we can be give it grudgingly. And Paul didn't want that to happen. And I thought, generosity is such a beautiful quality, and I want to talk about that in all different aspects today. And so I thought of a hopefully funny but practical illustration of kind of what Paul was trying to do, and that was our service day. I thought it was really fun. I could just tell everyone was having such a great time. Everyone was so eager to help. And the different groups I looked in on, there was amazing generosity of whatever people were bringing. And I chose to do baskets for firemen and policemen. And when I got to the room, we didn't have too much. Then all of a sudden, these baskets started coming in, all this good snacks. And we had so much fun packing them up and then just getting to know each other, because since we broke into not our groups, it was really fun to meet new people, and we prayed together. And then decided who would deliver what. And we picked stations, fire stations or police stations that were close to our house. And so some went in twos and threes. Some went alone. And I was encouraged, I picked one near my house, to take my grandchildren. Someone said that would be really fun. And so I had to wait till their schedules are free. These kindergartners and third graders are really busy. So I had heard some great responses from people that went that day. So I was planning to do that within the week, but I kind of put the basket aside, and so it wasn't visible, and I almost kind of forgot about it. And without all of you ladies, my enthusiasm really wasn't quite as strong. And as I was working on this talk, I thought, oh my goodness, what if some ladies from church just came by to see how I was doing, and they saw my basket kind of set off in the garage, not giving it, and maybe even some of the snacks had been taken out, you know, because they looked really good. And that's what Paul was actually dealing with. There had been this promise and enthusiasm, but they weren't sure if they were going to give it. And as it turned out, my grandkids were free on the weekend. And we did go and take the basket. And they wrote thank yous, too. And my little 5-year-old grandson wanted to draw pictures of him and the firemen. And there's a picture of us. We had so much fun. The firemen loved it. We had a great talk. And it was a wonderful example to my grandkids, too, of generosity. So thank you all. And I just have to say, the firemen said, we really like the healthy snacks because we get a lot of bad snacks, so, and we try to eat well. So, but this lesson kind of tied into our lesson was that we can be really enthused to give to the Lord in some way, and we get excited, but then as time passes, we can lose our enthusiasm. And we may think, you know, I could really use this money for something else, and maybe they don't really need that. And this is what Paul doesn't want to have happen to the Corinthians, because he wants everybody to win. And I was thinking, he wants the Corinthians to win to have the joy of giving. He wants the Macedonians to win in their action of giving as a result of the Corinthians giving. We encourage each other. And he wants the people in Judea to get their gift, to help them, because they really were in a real time of physical need. So all involved when giving is generous. And it's so neat that our generosity motivates others. And I love the verse in Hebrews 10:24 that says, let us consider how to spur one another or stir one another up to love and good deeds. I've always loved that verse. And we want to encourage one another to be generous. And that's what we did that a couple weeks ago. And I was with a friend just having coffee, and I don't know how it came up. She wasn't bragging, but she just said she had a neat opportunity at the dollar store because there's probably a lot of people there that don't have a lot of money. And this gal looked had a lot of kids in front of her, and so she just paid for her bill. And I just thought, isn't that cool? And I would never think of doing that, but she made me want to do that. So we spur one another on when we are generous. Another verse that says the same thing is in our lesson, in verse 6. Whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. That's not it. Uh-oh. There, thank you. See, I'm getting pretty good at this, but, oh, I didn't say this. She doesn't want me to say it. Because I had to leave, I really got my talk done, but I'm not good at PowerPoint. I've said that. Anne helps me. She goes, just send me your talk and I'll do it. So Anne is really doing teaching with me today. This is her PowerPoint, so... I don't want to take any credit.
Yeah, we just had a mistake.
Yes. Thank you, Anne. This is a beautiful verse from our passage. Whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and whoever sows generously will also reap generously. And don't you think our service day, we reaped generously? That verse really fits. Another verse that applies here that I like is Jesus is talking in Luke 6:38. And it says, give and it will be given to you a good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over. I like that picture. Running over. It will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. So because of your generosity, I got to see joy in the firemen's faces and joy in my grandkids' faces as they got to climb on the engine. So it just... generosity pours over, and I just want us to think of that. God's love overflows to us, and our love and generosity can overflow. And I hope that we can overflow with generosity to the Guthrie family in the weeks to come, and especially in the weeks to come. Things, everyone's there right at first, but then we can forget. So Paul is sending his friends, his brothers, the finance committee, to the Corinthians to have this very thing happen so that they will have joy in giving generously. And then Paul goes on to say how to give. And he says, each of you should give what you have decided in your heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. So it sounds to me, when that verse in our passage, it sounds like there's some planning involved. It doesn't just happen. And so I want to just share briefly, I mean, there's so many things you can say on finances and money, but a few guidelines in giving that have helped me and are mostly from 1 Corinthians. But the first one is to honor the Lord from the first fruits of what you get. I think that's so important. Honor from the first fruits, not the end of the month, the beginning. And this proverb says, honor the Lord with your wealth and with the first fruits of all your produce. Then your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will be bursting with wine. And there again is that overflowing idea. I want us to think of overflowing generosity today. And so sometimes we can get so absorbed in thinking about getting what is ours that we miss what brings a real blessing, and that is joy in giving God what is his. From 1 Corinthians, so back to another, but the same people, Paul says that we should have regular proportionate giving. On the first day of the week, each of you is to put something aside and store it up as he may prosper. And so I just thought, just from that verse, the first day of the week, it's regular. Doesn't have to be every week, but a regular thing that we do in our life. Let each of you, everyone, we all need to give, put aside and save. It's planning, not just impulsive giving, as he may prosper, and it's proportionate to what we have. those are just some little simple guidelines, I think, from Corinthians and then from our passage today, give cheerfully. Because I thought, you know what, our heart attitude is so important in giving. Giving is so wrapped up in not just money and stuff, but who we are. I read a cute little saying from Warren Wiersbe. We have a book by him, and he says, our giving must come from the heart, and the motive in the heart must please God. We must not be sad givers who give grudgingly or mad givers who give because we have to, but glad givers who cheerfully share what we have. Because why? Because we have experienced the grace of God. And it's easier, I find, to be cheerful to give when we have planned for it and saved. It's also much easier to give when we recognize the grace of God, when we recognize, you know what, he owns it all anyway. We don't, and we're not giving back what is ours. We're really giving back what is his. And God is such a great model of being a giver, a great model of generosity. It's said in our lesson, God is a giver, not a taker. And there's a beautiful proverb that I hadn't really read before that says it this way. It's Proverbs 8:18-21. And this is from God. With me are riches and honor, enduring wealth and prosperity. My fruit is better than fine gold. What I yield surpasses silver. I walk in the way of righteousness along the path of justice, bestowing rich inheritance on those who love me and making their treasuries full. Again, another beautiful promise of you can't outgive God. He will give back and make our treasuries full. He gave us his son, and he gives us so much every day. God's generosity should motivate us to be generous. And we are promised a blessing, another blessing. In Proverbs 11:24, it says, one man gives freely, yet gains even more. Another withholds unduly, but comes to poverty. A generous man will prosper, and he who refreshes others will himself be refreshed. I love it. I've always liked that refreshment part, but I hadn't put it into giving. But as we give and are generous, we are refreshed. Generosity can not only refresh us, but it refreshes others. And another saying I heard from an author that I really like named Randy Elkhorn looked at it in a little different way. And it says, God doesn't just look at what we give. He also looks at what we keep. That one got me. Early in our marriage, we didn't have hardly any money at all. Most of our friends didn't either, which was kind of fun. We worked together. But here's some things that some friends gave up to give something that had a higher value. And these are real illustrations. Most of us aren't at this stage now, but it's just good to be reminded of that. Some women gave up their great career to be home with young children. Some gave up a clean carpet so they could have lots of kids in their homes and be fun moms. Some gave up a cleaning lady to help pay for a Christian education. One gave up a long-awaited new couch to send a child to camp. One gave up one of their vacations of that year to support a Christian missionary family. One gave up a new dress so she could give food for a hungry family. Simple things, but when we give up, there's joy in that, in giving. And sometimes we think that we don't have any extra to give, but I thought of a funny illustration for me. I don't drink lattes or coffee or anything, but I really like Gelson's iced tea. Maybe I'm addicted to Gelson's iced tea. And it's gone up to almost $3. That's a lot. But I have about 5 a week, so that's $15 a week, $60 a month. And when I thought of that, I thought, that's enough, easy to support a child in India. I support some kids in India. And so it really made me think. And I thought, when's the last time I really gave up something that I really liked that would be a sacrifice? Or another way to say it is, what am I hanging on to, God, that you want me to give away? How can I more generously spend your money, God? And I thought, you know, with that silly illustration, I'm lucky I can afford to give and buy iced tea. But if I couldn't, that there's always ways to find money to give if God has called us to do that. So that's just silly. As I said, I want to talk about more areas than money in generosity, too. This passage is basically referring to finances and money. But that's only, you know, one aspect of generosity. I want us to be generous people because aren't they fun to be around? So I chose six areas of generosity. One, I'm going to just briefly talk about money. As I was reading through Proverbs, there's so many verses in Proverbs that talk about giving to the poor and the blessings that result. God has a heart for the poor. So as we plan on giving, I think we want to include the poor. But I read a really good book that I highly recommend called When Helping Hurts. If any of you, a lot of you are givers, and a lot of you have heard that book. I think we have to be careful how we give our money and how we do it. Sometimes our money doesn't help. It hurts people. And we're finding out that in foreign missions and stuff, we're learning more to help them help themselves instead of just giving them money. But the poor is important, and it takes time and research sometimes to find out who to give to, and there's so many good organizations. But one proverb that I liked was in Proverbs 19:7. It says, "He who is kind to the poor lends to the Lord, and he will reward him for what he has done." So we want to keep that in mind. My husband and I have developed different criteria of how we want to give, and everyone is different. But one of the things that we have chosen to do is when we give, we like to give where the gospel is given besides meeting the physical needs. That's just one of ours. And I think that's good to talk about with your spouses, what your values are. And God calls us all differently. We are supposed to give to those who teach us and minister to us. So I would like an offering today, please. Christina ministers to us. So we are to give to our church and where we're ministered. And the Bible says the worker is worthy of his wages. Second thing besides money is possessions. Proverbs 3:27-28 says, "Do not withhold good from those who deserve it when it is in your power to act. Do not say to your neighbor, 'Come back later, I'll get it tomorrow,' when you have it with you, because later may never come." And so as we see needs and we can meet them, we want to. But we had a great saying years ago in a women's ministry, "The need is not the call." And I always thought of that as ministry, but that's true with money. I mean, we see it everywhere, especially poor on the streets. And we know their needs, but it's not necessarily our call. And so that's something we need to really ask God. But so often it'd be easy to just give something generously and what it does to help people in that case. And I'm sure a lot of you have heard stories of maybe someone just giving something anonymously and it just goes to meet that person's need. And I wish I had more time to tell a lot of those stories. But something really simple for me, I woke up in the middle of the night, which I do often, and someone was sick or something, and I was going to make them, I thought I should make them soup. And then God brought to mind this other gal that I hadn't seen for a long time who had a hip replacement. And I thought, you know, maybe it would just be nice to go and bring her soup too. And so I went back to sleep, and sometimes when I get up in the morning, I think, did God really say that? That's kind of silly. Just call this girl and tell her I'm bringing her soup. And I thought, well, Satan doesn't give us those ideas, so I guess it must be the Lord. So I called this friend, and I just said, "I just want to bring you this turkey vegetable soup I make." And she said, "Oh, you won't believe it." She goes, "Last night I was praying, and we were out of food because her husband had been cooking, and I prayed that I could get some homemade vegetable soup." And it was so fun to just have listened to God. I mean, he obviously told me that and be the answer. But sometimes we think of those things, and then we don't do them. So we want to be generous with our possessions. Another area, so money, possessions, hospitality. 1 Peter 4:9 says, "Show hospitality to one another without grumbling. Open our homes to each other." We have had our lives so enriched by so many different people living with us. Lots of young men in ministry, two unwed moms, many missionaries. And we first moved into our house in Harborview. I just had a 2-year-old. We thought we lived in a mansion, but it was pretty tacky parts of it, and especially our bonus room. I mean, I look now, there had this ugly formica, and not formica, but tile. Anyway, but this couple needed a place to stay, and so I go, "Okay, come." This was my first of doing this. And, I mean, really, if you could see it, it was pretty bad, but we had so much fun with them. And I thought I would have missed so much if I had thought my house had to be just perfect before I had people. And I'm so glad I learned that lesson back when we were first married, because I'm not a perfectionist. So it's never perfect, and I would never have people if that was my goal. So Don't wait till your house is perfect or you have enough money or you have enough room or you don't think you can cook good enough. Have people in your home. We cheat them and each other if we don't do that. Fourth thing is time. Giving our time is showing generosity, making people more important than projects. And I don't have much to say just on this one, except, again, hearing about Deb and some other people here that are really hurting. Take the time to write them or call them or go see them or whatever. Bring them flowers. Our time is so important to give. Five is serving. I think Jesus is such a beautiful example of serving. He washed his disciples' feet. Here he's the master, serving in that way. And there are so many of you that are servants in this room, and you don't get a lot of attention. You're not up here speaking, but there's servants in the back. It happens to be Leslie right now, and she's not even listening. Are you listening? If they aren't doing their job, we can't do ours. And things, I think when there are people who serve behind the scenes, amazing things happen in rooms like this or places that we don't even know. So I love servers. Thank you. That is really a way to give generously to people. And the last one I just want to mention is being encouraging, being generous and encouraging. Encourage one another and build each other up. I think birthdays are a great time to do that. Lots of affirmation. It doesn't take a lot of time, but it can make someone's day. And I think when we just run into people to affirm them, when you get a compliment from a stranger or something, you really think of it. It took only a second to do it. Take time to encourage one another. One time in my life was so long ago, but I was really down, and a friend came over, and she just brought a little bouquet of flowers and left them for me and said she loved me. I'll never forget that. It doesn't take a lot sometimes to be encouraged, so let's be lavish as we encourage one another. I love to be around generous people. They're just so great. Here, Anne does my whole PowerPoint while I'm gone. I got to be with some friends that shared a wonderful trip, and I'm so thankful for that, and I want that to encourage me. So I hope this is, besides money, these are all different areas, and you can name a lot more where we can be generous. One other point I just want to make regarding financial giving. I've heard people say, I give my time to church, so I don't need to give my money. And I think that's sort of a cop-out usually. And maybe there's a case for that. But I think we all lose if we do that. Our money's a test. Can we let it go? Hold it loosely, or does it have control over us? That's just one of my thoughts. So as we go on in our passage, Paul is encouraging us with the results of cheerful giving. It says in verse 8, and God is able to bless you abundantly so that in all things, at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work. So many of these words, overflowing, abound. And we're not talking here about there's a not a gospel, but it's called the prosperity gospel out there that just says, you've heard on TV, if you give this, for sure you'll get this back. That's not what we're saying here. That's not the purpose of giving. However, God is really promising us in this passage that there's a lot of benefits to giving generously. We can't really give God. And there's a great verse along this line that many of you know in Malachi, which actually says to test the Lord. We don't get that said much. Test me. And God says, bring the whole tithe into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house. Test me in this, says the Lord Almighty, and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that there will not be room to store it. Isn't that a great verse? I love that one. So I want to challenge us this morning to consider doing some testing. Test the Lord, be bold in generous giving, and see what the Lord might do. When I got out of college, I joined Campus Crusade staff for a few years. And in that day, obviously, money was very different. But I made a whopping about $350 a month. But I decided that I should tithe that and give a tenth of that. And it always worked out. And sometimes we think we're too poor to give. But you know what? It's easier to give $50 than $500 or $5,000. And so if you start small, you're able to do it when we have more. And I'm not saying that this is always true, but in the case when I was on crusade stuff, we had to raise our own support. Those of us that chose to give back to the Lord always had enough. And some that didn't always were having trouble with their support. Maybe a coincidence, but I don't think so. Verse 11 says, you will be enriched in every way so that you can be generous on every occasion. And through us, your generosity will result in thanksgiving to God. A beautiful picture. And so I just want to close a little bit with some personal things. It's always hard to talk about money. I've done it quite a few times. And it's hard because in some ways giving is supposed to be in secret. And we don't want to brag and say this is what we give. And on the other hand, from our passage today, the Macedonians were encouraged by the Corinthians' generosity. And if we don't share some stories, then how do we encourage each other? So I'm going to share just a little bit of our journey, but not very much. So I hope it's not taken wrong. I want it to be an encouragement. We started out with very little, because with my great Campus Crusade salary, I really came into marriage with a lot of money. I didn't have debt, though. My husband had been in dental school, so he didn't have anything. And we came to California, and he started working, and his first paycheck was $25. But when he became a Christian, he really felt like he should tithe with no one hardly telling him. So I had it from my background. He had it just from God saying it. So we always tried to do that in our marriage. And we had heard really good teaching on giving when we were young. And one of the things that was so helpful to us is to never buy something on credit unless it appreciates, like a house or something. But we tried to do that for the most part, and it's really hard. And we didn't have as much as other people always, but we never got in big trouble. So for some of you younger ones, it's too late for some of us older ones. But I still think that's a great philosophy. And there's a wonderful course on giving by David Ramsey. Probably a lot of you heard his name. He spoke at Mariners a month ago or so. And I know Joel Owen has openly said that he and Emily took this course and it changed their life. So if any of you are having issues in that area, I'd look up David Ramsey. But that's not my talk today. At one point, as we made a little more than $350 a month, when Terry was doing pretty well in his career, we decided that we had a really great life, better than great. And we didn't really need to live any higher. So we didn't need another house. We didn't need any newer cars. So we decided to keep our spending where it was. And if he made more, we would just give it or save it. And that was sort of a novel idea for Newport Beach. And I think people thought maybe we were a little crazy. But we don't always do that. But anyway, that was a real freedom time to just say, hey, we don't need to spend any more than what we're doing right now. And I encourage that. And Anne found this, when God blesses you financially, don't raise your standard of living, raise your standard of giving. I think that's a great statement. At some point, we decided to share kind of what we were doing with our boys. And we had tried to teach them about giving and stuff, but I don't know if we did a great job. But we thought, well, we should sit down and tell them what we did. So we shared kind of what we were doing at this point. And it was so funny to hear both their reactions. One of them said, oh, he got really worried. He said, well, if you give all that, then we won't have enough money to live on. And the other one said, wow, we could have gone on some really neat trips and had a lot of stuff. Why didn't we do that? So they came from different perspectives. But both boys became very generous when they began working, and they have that pattern in their homes now, which I love to see. So I thought our giving as parents can also really impact our children's giving. They learn more by our actions, you know, than by our words. They know us best. There's so many great stories of people who give out of obedience when it's a huge sacrifice, and we often hear how God gives it back. I would love to read stories like that, but one young man didn't have much money, and he saw something on a mission thing, and he gave, and he didn't have it. But he felt God said do it, and he got his income tax return back, and it came back for that exact amount. And there's story after story like that, that we can not be foolish, but also trust God to take care of us. You hear stories of missionaries praying. They're just, you know, they have no more food left, and then all of a sudden, money comes, and it's the exact amount that they need, and the person that sent that didn't even know it. So giving, it can just have so many fun stories. The end of our chapter tells us that giving will meet needs, which is obvious, but it also is a blessing to be the answer to someone's prayers, isn't it? And so as God speaks to us, listen and give. Giving also glorifies God, and it unites God's people. I think this is one of the major purposes of Paul. He wants the Corinthians give to the Judeans because there's Gentiles and there's Jews, and there could be a division. He wants them to come together, and actually giving and money can bring people together that way, and it's an expression of love. So when we give to missionaries and other people, don't you feel closer to them sometimes? I was thinking when kids go on mission trips, which they do here at Grace, and you pray for them, but if you actually financially give to them, you're more bonded with them, and you want to know what happened when they get back. I've gotten to go to India, I think, 5 times now, and just got a sweet letter from one of the children I sponsor there. And I thought somehow that ties you together with people overseas or here. So as we practice this generous giving, we find that it changes our hearts, doesn't it? Or our generous heart wants to give more. It's not just writing a check. That's easy for some of us just to do that. It's giving ourselves to the Lord. And in chapter 8, it says, they gave themselves first of all to the Lord and then gave what they had. So it all ties together. It's who we are. Our gift should be a symbol of our hearts that are surrendered to the Lord. And I like that. It's much easier to let go of things, hold loosely to them, when our hearts and lives are committed to God. And we see him as a generous God that pours out blessings on us to overflowing. We can then overflow in generosity, and God gets the grace, and he gets the praise and the glory. I was thinking just to end, we live in a very materialistic, indulgent society. A few years ago, I read some statistics about our area. Turned out Newport Coast, which I live near, had the highest per capita income in Orange County, yet the lowest giving, 2%. So having a lot of money doesn't necessarily mean we'll be givers. Sometimes it's the opposite. So I want to encourage us this morning, not let money control us, but let's use what we have been given generously for God's glory. And again, from Randy Alcorn, a man that's written on this topic beautifully so much, he said, when God blesses... I'll just read it. Okay. He said this, abundance, and this is so important, isn't God's provision for me to live in luxury. It's his provision for me to help others live. God entrusts me with his money, not to build my kingdom on earth, but to build his kingdom in heaven. Isn't that a good? God entrusts me with his money, not to build my kingdom on earth, but to build his kingdom in heaven. I wish I could always have that perspective. I would like to. I'm speaking on it, but I don't. But that's my prayer. So let's just pray. Lord, let us be women overflowing with generosity in all aspects as we have received your surpassing grace. Amen.